Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
We're standing outside.
Indeed. It's very strange. It's a big room with a blue ceiling.
And we are live in San Jose for WWDC with the Secret Podcast before a studio audience.
Oh, man. They saw the applause sign.
Yeah, I can tell you there are at least five people here, and there are also at most five people here.
Well, not including us.
Oh, my God. Our audience, do we count ourselves as part of the audience?
I watch when you're talking.
There's
watch when I'm talking.
Always been an audience of two people for our podcast, Dan.
It's weird.
Plus my cat.
We have never done this in front of people, which is strange. Usually it's just a dryer.
Yeah, I know. Occasional cat.
Yeah, sometimes some pets or sometimes some birds chirping out the window.
Yeah,
so.
It happens. So how's your week been?
My week has been pretty good. I got to go to the keynote, which was a lot of fun. It's always different. You know, we've talked about this a bit, but it's definitely different to be in the room for the keynote because it's a different energy. It's a different sort of immersion, too.
Some jerk is sitting in front of you and you can't see everything.
Yeah, that's part of it. I'm not in my pajamas. I think part of it is also you just, like, you're so in the moment that you're not really, you're focused on what you're doing. You're not multitasking. You're writing stuff, maybe, but, like, you're not, oh, I'm just going to browse the web a little bit or read Twitter while I'm watching this. Like, I'm really, like, posting, and that's it. And when you get done, as we've talked about before, you only know the information that was just presented to you. Like, you come out of that and you're like, ooh, that was interesting. I got to think about that and digest. And then you look at Twitter and it's like, millions of things have been discovered while you were locked in a room with 6,000 people.
Yeah, the keynote bubble is a real thing.
It's very strange.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then you and I both, I think at various points, got to go over and see the pro hardware as well.
Yes, I touched it and they got mad at me because I touched it. I left my greasy, greasy human fingerprints on it and they had to wipe it down.
It's the hands-off area.
They had to wipe it down.
Your new headline is Mac Pro vulnerable to human sweat.
Yeah, that's right. Human oils. Do not deposit your human oils on the Mac Pro.
I do not need a Mac Pro. It's way too expensive for me.
Do you want one?
I mean, a little bit. I was a person who owned Pro hardware. You know, I had a Power Mac G3 for years, and I think I swapped out almost every part of that. I put in a new processor at one point. I did hard drive and RAM upgrades, and that machine ticked for a long time. But there, you know, the world has changed, and an iMac that I have, not even an iMac Pro, is more than sufficient for what I'm doing. And which is largely typing and some podcast editing.
That's true. That's true.
I do regularly do a podcast with eight people on it, which is only 992 more, and I would basically need a Mac Pro.
Yeah.
Also, I would need a new job because that would be terrible. Running a game show with 1,000 people sounds like a nightmare.
No one wants to hear it, honestly. It's just a crowd
shouting.
Least of
all me. What about you? What was your week like?
Well, I got a lot of what I wanted in the iPad OS stuff.
Mm.
We were just saying, doing the Clockwise podcast, that I'm looking around for a new thing to complain about to replace file access and iOS, because that one is over now.
Audio recording and transmission. How about that? That's the new winner.
There, apparently, I can still do that. But yeah, I you know, I was impressed with that. The shortcut stuff, I can't wait to dive into.
There's a lot there, and they spent almost no time on it.
And Mike Hurley, so we were just recording Clockwise with Mike Hurley and Alex Cox, and Mike Hurley was regaling us with the story of what people have found about mouse support in iPad OS, and that not only will it work with Bluetooth and wired mice and trackpads, where you can actually turn on this accessibility feature, and you can use a mouse or a trackpad, but mice with programmable buttons, it will let you assign them to things like shortcuts, which Mike is like, I got to get one of those gaming mice so I can assign shortcuts to everything. It's like, you know,
the problem with those is you end up with 37 buttons. You can't remember what any of them do.
Right. Yeah, exactly right. But it's, I think iPad OS is, look, part of it is marketing. It's just the name is the name. It's going to be software running on iOS regardless. But it is part of what that marketing, the message that marketing sends is the iPad is different. The iPad does some stuff that iPhones don't. I think it pushes the iPad a little bit away from the iPhone at a time when the iPad is kind of moving toward the Mac.
Yeah.
So that's part of it. And it gives them the freedom to say, you know, we want this platform to be used in a bunch of different ways. And yes, if you want to use a gaming mouse with it and trigger shortcuts, go ahead. I feel like it gives them maybe a little bit more freedom and latitude. I also really, really believe that it makes it harder for them to hide Like they've done every other year for iPad features. Like next year, iPadOS, everybody's going to say, where's your iPadOS update list? And you can't just kind of say, well, it gets all the iPhone features.
Yeah, it needs to still get the love. The, because it's like they've gone every other year. The mouse thing is interesting, too, because from what I heard people talking to them, they were very, they stressed a lot that it was an accessibility feature, first and foremost, not a, like, we're adding pointer support to the iPad so that you can use it more like a Mac. It's for people who need those sort of, you know, those accessibility features. And that's interesting because it's both sort of a certain amount of cover for them to be able to say that, like, this is why we're not necessarily spending all this time optimizing it, like, for all these things that you, the average person, might want to use it for.
It also gives them time to discover what people use it for.
Yeah, exactly.
And how the reaction is to that. And Mike's point is that he has RSI issues. For him, using the iPad in a stand and being able to use a pointing device that's down on the same level as his keyboard is an accessibility issue.
It is, absolutely. That is a totally, I think Apple has in the past also used accessibility at times to feel out what people use. Because, like, there were, you know, people using, like, invert colors, right? And they're like, oh, I guess we could do a dark mode, you know? Like, I think they sometimes, or, like, turning off transparency for a while, there was all those effects that started in iOS 7, like the motion parallax and the transparency, and it was an accessibility option. And I think it also, the fact that it got so widely used, I think was part of what made them back off of it a little bit, because even for people who it was not necessarily just an accessibility issue, but a preference, some of that was just sort of, I think, fed back into the idea of, like, well, maybe this was too far, or maybe we have caused more problems than we've actually solved.
So how are you feeling about Catalyst?
Catalyst. I feel like we're doing... Is that your preparation when you go out?
Catalyst.
In some ways, the most complimentary thing I can say about Catalyst is I don't think most people will notice it at all. And I think that's one reason where we've talked a lot about it over the past year. A lot. It got very little time in the keynote.
Very little.
Compared to how important it is. But I think it's going to be, you know, we talked about transitions the other week and how Apple has done so many transitions. I think this is another one of those cases where it's like they've made a transition that is essentially seamless. You are probably not even going to know which apps are Catalyst and which aren't. You will know from the virtue of seeing those apps on other platforms.
You might know an app that does some complex or weird things that a Catalyst app can't, but a lot of Apple's, like Apple with music and podcasts and TV, one of those apps is Catalyst and the other two aren't, and they all look the same.
Right. So I think you're going to know because you're going to be like, oh, Overcast is here. It's probably a Catalyst app because it's clearly an iOS app. But I think if you just were given sort of a side-by-side comparison, you might not be able to tell. And that is good.
That's what you want.
And I think that is kind of the important part to take away from this, because so many people were, I feel like, decrying this as like, oh, they're going to put all these iPad apps on the Mac.
It's going to feel
terrible.
Like you're running an emulator, exactly. Like an iPad emulator.
And I think the answer is it's going to ideally feel like it's just a Mac app.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's right. I was surprised by the limited time they gave it. Obviously, there's more of a developer story happening in the background that they're talking about. By the way, in the Catalyst session yesterday, which they, by the way, wasn't called Catalyst. It was called Running iPad Apps on the Mac, which I think is a core part of Apple's messaging here, is that they really want to make that linkage between the iPad and the Mac. That's why step two of their three-step process is make a good iPad app, and then you bring it to the Mac. But in there, they had a demo, and one of their demo slides was a list of desserts, and marzipan was listed with a little heart next to it. we'll remember marzipan
fondly.
Mm-hmm. Good times.
Yeah. That was...
But yeah, I can't wait. Like, I cannot wait for that email from Canis, the developer of Ferrite, saying, I hope he does this. I don't actually know, but I got a beta of Ferrite Recording Studio for the Mac. Here it is. I would love to try that out. And Overcast. And that's... So on Clockwise, this is like, this podcast is almost like a footnote for our episode of Clockwise.
Clockwise Digest.
Relay.fm/Clockwise.
Live now.
It's a really good episode with the original hosts. So, and I got a new title.
That's true.
I now have a new official title for Clockwise that you'll have to listen to discover. But in that episode, Alex said something that I thought was really interesting, which is that for her, it makes the Mac more interesting to her. Mm. And I think that that's the truth is there's, I like to do podcasts, but sometimes, so I like to do, use the Mac and there's, I like to use the iPad. But there's also like, I used to like to use the apps.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Alex's point was her favorite apps are on the iPad. And
right.
That's one of the reasons she uses an iPad a lot. And if she can use those apps on a Mac where she has to do all this other work, like her video and audio editing work, then it makes the Mac that much more appealing to her. And I think there's some truth in that, that,
yeah.
that it's not just about iPad apps invading the Mac. It's also, as a Mac user, finally being able to use these really interesting apps that were not previously available
and
to
you. And I
think
you said this in your Macworld column this week. It's a rising tide lifts all boats situation where...
I think what I said is that they're like two convicts handcuffed together now. It's like, we're in this together, buddy.
They're on a boat. There's a tide is rising. You don't want to drown because you're handcuffed to the other person.
Yeah, the iPad and the Mac, their success is together now.
And that's as it should be. I mean, the iPhone and iPad largely had an intertwined success and still do, but I think... This is ultimately kind of the stuff that we've been talking about now for a couple of years, which is all of Apple's platforms are so tightly tied together now that there really is a stuff that is a benefit on one is going to be a benefit to all. And in some cases more than others, right? Like tvOS is only a subsection of what you're going to see. But even though the iPad has been split out into iPadOS, it's still very, very close. It's essentially iOS.
It's iOS, yeah.
And so tying that, you know, by transitivity, now the iPhone is tied to the Mac, right? I remember a little bit of high school math, and I think that was a property.
Yeah, but with that step of the iPad, right? And this is
right.
This is when all those rumor reports about how, well, it'll be iPad apps, not Mac, not iPhone apps.
Yeah.
This is because iPad apps have to have that like multiple screen size, and they're defining it in this way, and keyboard support and all these things that you don't really need. You do need some of that on the iPhone, and I think they'll get there with the iPhone apps too, but they're just trying to emphasize, look, let's do this all in one go. You should make good iPad apps. They will also be good Mac apps. You put in a little extra work.
And a lot of them will also be iPhone apps, right? Like a lot of these will be... And that's a huge opportunity, and I think something that they've also talked about maybe going forward as this continues to expand is like really just being able to write an app that you can deploy across all of Apple's platforms, just with tuned to whatever interface you're going to use.
And then you throw in something like Swift UI, which, you know, in theory is going to allow the same kind of knowledge to generate a UI on an Apple Watch and a Mac.
Right. That is one of those, I think that was sort of the most bifurcated demo that they had, right? Because obviously the developers get very excited about that. Well, the people in the front of the room, as Craig was saying last night, like...
What?
Yeah, like, isn't that the way it should... Isn't that the way it always works?
That's how computers work, right?
It was interesting for me because, you know, my background in development, limited as it is, was web development.
Yeah.
And that literally is the way it works in web development. It's like, oh, I changed this color to blue. I refresh my browser and it's blue.
So I interviewed a couple guys at Apple who about Swift UI, and it'll be an upgrade on Monday. And did that interview this morning. And I brought up that same point, which is I had several moments where I had this like CSS kind of thing where it's like, I remember when we used to say, this is bold and put it over here on the page. And then at some point you kind of like walked away from that and said, why don't we do this declarative thing where you say that, you know, here is this style or this is going to be emphasized. And then you over here, you say, make it blue or whatever.
Right.
And that it made more sense that way. And then their example where they've got the pages and pages of code that's very hard to read. And then they've got like a single page and it's very clear. And you can, even I can understand what's going on.
I was like, oh, maybe I'll become a developer now.
Yeah. That's right.
Clearly, it's super easy.
I look forward to your next novel, which is just Swift UI code.
It's a menu. You can pick stuff off of it. That's does great. A little animation. Yeah.
Nice. That's good.
I keep thinking I hear the leaves rustling, but it's like, kind of walk my...
You're like rubbing your hat on the leaves there. Because we're outside.
This is not a thing I get in my house when we record this.
No, this is true. What else should we talk about to entertain these fine people? By which I mean Six Colors members, thanks for being members, and also the five gentlemen who are sitting here watching
us. Six Colors members, thank you for standing here.
Yes.
I am fascinated by the marketing decision that Apple made with the Pro View display. So the price, obviously, is something people have been talking about. And, of course, the thing that everybody seized upon is it's a $1,000 monitor stand. And it's like, yeah, okay.
Yeah, well, Marcus Brownlee said you could have just said that it's a $6,000 monitor.
You save $800 with a Visa mount.
Yeah, oh, and you order it without the mount, and it's $1,000 less.
Right, yeah. And it's like, well, either it's got to be on an arm or it's got to have a Visa mount.
Yeah,
you need
those,
one or the other, right? So it's not like you are buying a $6,000
magnetic hole in the back. back,
leaning it against your wall of your cubicle. Or having hiring an
intern my servants
hold it
for, me. Yeah,
yeah. You got to buy one or the other. So at that case, at that point, you might as well say it's $6K and you can save $800 by getting it mounted. But I think that they were worried that they were going to that it was the same price as the Mac Pro. I think they didn't want to say it's a $6,000 computer and a $6,000 monitor. They wanted to make it look like the monitor was cheaper. I don't think that helped them. I think that was actually the wrong move.
And the funny thing is, I mean, what it's the difference between what people desire and what this product actually is. Because what the people desire, and there have been good pieces written about it this week, it is the case for the 5K standalone display that is essentially make an iMac display that stands alone, that works with a Mac Mini and an iMac and the Mac Pro. Because, you know, very few people...
And MacBooks.
And MacBooks, too, because very few people need this monitor.
Yes.
And I think there's a strong argument there that Apple's decisions about not doing crappy branding on their monitors and caring about industrial design, it's like, literally, let me buy something that looks kind of like an iMac, but all it is monitor. I think that there's a case to be made there, and I wish they would do that. That said, though, currently, what is it? Is it ISO, I think, sells this $6,000 Pro monitor that they had... comparing it to the Apple monitor. So it's basically the same price. And the Apple monitor is so much... I mean, it's hilariously bad. And I'm sure it's a good monitor, but compared to the Apple monitor, it's awful. It's just... It looks so bad. And that... But compared to that $43,000 reference monitor, they basically look the same.
Right, right.
And that's what is weird about this monitor is that it's really a super high-end pro display. It's not for you to write your next novel on, nor should it
be. My words need to be accurate. They need to be color accurate.
You could really crank it up, crank up the font size.
I need the nano-etched one, too.
Yeah, yeah. You don't want any glare. You don't want any glare.
That's hard to write.
So that's the funny thing is that it's not that this isn't kind of brilliant, because honestly, if I was a maker of reference displays, I'd be like, uh-oh. Like Apple just decided to take us out of business, you know, if you're Sony. Well, but the desire among all of us still remains, which is, Apple, why don't you just make something using that iMac panel that's a really nice monitor, take a big profit margin on it, and let us buy that.
They would have to, right? Like, because I think the consumer display market in and of itself is not a high-margin market.
Right, but Apple's never going to sell something without
high
margins. And there aren't that many good external displays out there for these kinds of things that are Retina level.
It really is the iMac is this kind of the big one. And I think there's people are making similar arguments about the Mac Pro in terms of a lot of people want something that is not the power of the Mac Pro but has the modularity components of it. And I really, what I would... And this is sort of that mythical mid-range tower that we've been talking about for
like
a decade.
That Apple has refused to build
since
the Power Mac G4.
I don't think they will. I do wish in some ways that if the Mac Mini got like slightly more upgradable, that there would be... Because right now, and I've talked about this a bunch, like I would love to be able to put a bigger capacity drive myself in the Mac Mini.
And
right
the truth is, it's got to be external at this point. They would tell you, Apple would tell you, Thunderbolt 3 is really fast.
Yeah, I
hang
know.
A drive off of it.
I totally get that. But like that's the thing is, like I feel like... you know, there's ways to address parts of that market without having to go all in on building a whole configurable new computer.
I got it, Dan. A Thunderbolt 3 thing that looks like a mini tower. And you just stick the Mac Mini in it.
Oh, I like that. It's like a Duodoc, but like for Mac Minis.
Yeah, you just... The Mac Mini like slides in like it's a little drawer or something. It slides in there. And then you got Bays with crazy stuff.
Bays for days.
In there.
That's I just wrote their marketing copy.
That's right.
Bays for days.
With Z's.
Yes, that's right. Let's see that or BAE, but that's like a whole different...
No,
that's a whole different
that's
feeling.
Not, anyway,
know.
The Thunderbolt 3 Mini Tower with Mac Mini not included.
You heard it here first.
Yeah, $999 for the...
for the tower. Oh, there's a stand that it goes under.
The wheels.
Too. So what else stood out to you of the, like, I mean, we didn't even touch on, like, we talked about iPad, but, like, we had iOS and Mac OS updates in there, too, that had plenty of other stuff in them.
Yeah, I'm very glad that screen time is coming to the Mac.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a really exciting feature, but, like, screen time's good, but the best thing about it is it's, like, Apple reconceived parental controls for the first time in, like, more than a decade, and on the Mac, it just highlighted how bad the stuff was on the Mac.
Yeah.
And so doing screen time on the Mac and having them be manageable from anywhere where you can manage all your devices in one place, really happy about that. I'm really happy about another, like, not super ballyhooed thing, which is the T2 Macs being
activation
locked so that you can, you know, if somebody steals that MacBook, it won't work without your password. That's good.
And similarly, the stuff now that you'll be able to use your watch to authenticate basically wherever you would type, I think, your administrator password, you can just double-click your watch side button.
I love it.
That's so cool. Like, I love the unlock ability, you know, like unlocking your Mac with your watch. And it's great that they're bringing that to more places.
Yeah, I really want Face ID on the Mac, though.
Yeah, I'm still a little surprised but that it doesn't have it, just because it seems like there is so much room for those systems in there.
And Touch ID is great, but Touch ID is only on a few laptops.
Right. Right.
And it's great on that MacBook Air. It's fantastic. But I have an iMac, and so I'm not going to be using Touch ID. But I have an Apple Watch, so that's the next best
thing. Yeah, it kind of gets you through there without having to add the hardware.
You know, Sidecar is interesting.
Sidecar is interesting. I looked at the list of apps, Sidecar apps, which I assume specifically was for stuff that, like, you want to use the pencil for, maybe.
Yeah.
And so that stuff is – none of that is stuff I'm ever going
to
use.
Right. It is primarily meant to be like a graphics tablet kind of thing, although it works with markup.
And it's both. It works also as both an extended and a mirrored display.
Yes. Yeah. You can do either one. It works with markup, and you can actually set markup to auto open on the iPad display.
Right.
So if you do like a screenshot, it just kind of comes up, and then you can mark it up with your pencil, and then,
which is nice because these are kind of more like those continuity features that they remember the continuity camera thing.
And in fact, it is a continuity feature, which is another. I was talking to Mike, who obviously sold ads to Luna Display for all the podcasts, and everybody's like, "Whoop, Luna Display, they just got killed." But it's like the number of things that Luna Display. There are always going to be edge cases that Apple doesn't support.
Right.
So. Sidecar only works within 10 meters of the Mac because it is a continuity feature, and they want you to be proximate to the Mac. It does have a keyboard, which is nice, which Luna Display doesn't have, but it doesn't do a bunch of the stuff. Like, you can't initiate from the iPad.
It's also not like it's not mostly a touchscreen, right?
And you can't use your finger. You can only use the Apple Pencil, is my understanding.
I thought there were places.
You can use the finger on the buttons, but not on the screen.
That's so weird. That's fascinating. Fascinating.
So there are a lot of things that Luna Display still does. So this is not brought to you by Luna Display. But I think it's a good example of usually when Apple Sherlocks, quote unquote, a product, it almost always takes it dead center. And all the stuff on the sides is still fair game.
We had James Thompson on The Rebound this week, and I think he referred to himself as being mildly Sherlocked
by
with
the calculator
on the watch.
It's
like, it's even got a tip calculator in it. But it's like, you know, his stuff does. I said maybe there's certain math it can't do. Like, maybe it can't do addition. I don't know.
Yeah, it could be.
But like, there is a ton of stuff. PCalc does so much more than Apple's calculator will ever do.
Sure.
So there's still plenty of room. And, you know, people who have PCalc aren't going to, like, probably stop using it for Apple's calculator.
No. I mean, Apple put a calculator in all sorts of other places that they didn't used to have one. And James somehow still stays in business. So.
Not the iPad.
Not the iPad.
iPad still doesn't have a calculator.
Still no calculator. By the way, you can't do real math on the iPad,
Here's
a big one, Dan. Do you know a calculator was removed this week? Do you know where that calculator was? Where that calculator lived? It lived in the dashboard.
Oh, the dashboard is dead. That's right. Where my poor
RIP dashboard. Dashboard was on life support system and unresponsive and in a permanent vegetative state for about 8 years, but it's gone now.
John Siracusa is going to really miss that weather, would you?
John Siracusa is the only person I know who used dashboard on a daily basis.
My dad.
Okay. I mean, I know there are others, too.
Yeah, it's. I mean, I disabled it long ago.
Yeah, me too. Me too. But that was. They had a calculator.
Yeah, it
that
did.
Was. Those were in the days. That was a sweet solution, right? Because it was all JavaScript that ran.
Yeah, it was like the outgrowth of the desk accessories back on classic Macs.
The desk accessories were pretty good.
Yeah, I remember really liking.
But it's gone. So that's one less calculator.
One less calculator in the world. My mission grows closer to complete.
Well, it's no the that one died, but the Apple Watch calculator was born.
Ah, okay. God closes a calculator and opens
another calculator window opens. Yes.
There's a bunch of stuff I'm really excited about in all the OSs that are just little gap filling things that I wanted. So I mentioned this on Clockwise a little bit, like, you know, multicolored flags in Mail on iOS.
That's right. How about flag emoji? Like, oh, this one is German.
Ooh. I still don't think there's an emoji search on iOS, which is kind of a bummer.
Yeah, that's terrible.
I think they moved. I saw that there's a document scanner in Files now.
Yeah, there's a document scanner API now.
Yeah. No, that's great.
So any app can basically say, open the document camera and take a picture and get the text back and
I use that for expensive stuff all the time, and I love that. That's now a thing. Yeah. I will definitely be making
use of that.
There's
a bunch of little things. That's my favorite thing about WWDC, not saying it out because it's really bad. The Worldwide Developer Conference.
Dub dub.
www.dc.
www.dc.
Um, my favorite thing about it is there's so much that even as your brain tries to encompass it all during the week, the fact is you go home and we spend the rest of the summer, certainly like the next month, and then the public betas come out and people are like, oh, did you see this thing? I love that discovery of all the little stuff that you either didn't see or didn't get on a slide, and then you're poking around and you're like, oh, like I'm sure there are a million new things in the Photos app.
Right.
But what they've really talked about is like this really high level thing they did where they completely redesigned a bunch of stuff, and I'm going to have to rewrite all the things that I wrote for my book and all that.
I was flipping through the full list of features, and the one that jumped out at me was Maps has flight status information in it now. I was like, what?
So like you can say, when can I need to go
to the airport?
Yeah.
And it can be like, oh, your flight is here, and this is the time. I was like, that's so weird. It also has, and this is a huge thing for me, Maps now has real-time transit, which it did not have. It had transit schedules.
Yeah.
But that was a big advantage of Google Maps, was that I could say, I want to go here. What train do I need to catch? Is that train late?
Yeah.
When is it going to arrive? And that was a huge advantage that Google Maps had over it. And seeing as I live with someone who is very connected to public transit and uses public transit on a daily basis, that is a incredibly huge deal. So I'm excited about that.
I'll card out one more. CarPlay got a lot better.
Oh, yeah.
And that you can have like multiple sources of information on a CarPlay window that you couldn't use to. Apparently, it also supports different aspect ratios and different shapes of screens, which is interesting for like if you're an automaker, which I am not. Are you an automaker?
Only part-time.
Lego automaker,
yeah,
maybe?
Yeah, part-time.
A bunch of the things in there look like they're just better. And CarPlay needs to be better and hasn't gotten better in a little while except very incrementally. And it looked like they did a lot to make it like Siri doesn't get in the way of your driving directions. And you can have kind of like one app's information peeking in while there's another app that's primary. And it's just, it looked at a glance, what I've seen of it, like a good update to CarPlay, which needs
months,
to be better.
I consider pulling out the head unit in my car because you can buy a newer version of the same head unit.
With CarPlay.
Because the CarPlay came out not long after, and it like fits in. It's another like VW OEM thing.
Sure.
And I keep thinking, because it's not bad. It's like a couple $100. And it's just like a slide out, slide in mostly. And then I'm just like,
do it.
I know. I kind of want to. But like my fiance was like, is this going to be more distracting than like having a screen there? Like she really doesn't want it to be.
I think if you use navigation and you've got a map on your phone, it would be better to have the map on the dash.
I kind of agree with that. That's kind of my feeling. Also, I just really want to play with it.
Yeah.
This is the danger. This is the danger.
I know that feeling. We just did that. We just put a CarPlay screen into Jamie's car, which is... It had a radio in it that I installed badly, apparently, and was falling apart. And, you know, it took like an hour. And it's great. And now I have a CarPlay test system.
Yay. Yeah, right, exactly. That's the other side.
I need to borrow the car to plug in my iPhone for iOS 13 testing. But yeah, I've got it now, so that's
good. It's for work.
Yeah, it's work. Drive the minivan. Teenagers love driving minivans, don't they?
You can fit so many more friends in it, though.
Yeah. Well, Dan, I think we did it.
Did we cover everything?
I think we literally covered every single thing that could possibly be covered in a podcast this week.
Except for Calendar.
Calendar
is
very
angry.
He must
make an appearance.
With us.
Because we're off time.
It's not Friday.
It's not Friday.
It's not 9 a.m. Pacific.
Sun is Calendar's natural vulnerability.
Is it?
It is.
Is he a vampire?
I mean...
Is that canon now?
He's not a vampire, Jason.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Well, before we say goodbye, we have to once again thank our tremendous studio audience.
So many. There's now like 50 of them.
Yeah, it's a huge crowd now. Throngs. Please, people, keep your clothes on. And bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.